I have a difficult assignment today. We've been working for a while on a part of the Bible called Hebrews, a 13-page sermon written we don't know when by we don't know who for a group of people we don't know where who are facing we don't know what. Sounds fascinating, no? Like it couldn't possibly matter less to us in the U.S., right? And yet, the 11th page of this sermon is one of the most famous passages in the whole Bible, and it contains what I think is the most important verse in the whole Bible. But the problem with this chapter is it has a bad word in it. It is a word that I swore when I started preaching I would never say in public. No, not swear words, although I really hope I never slip and say those. The bad word I'm referring to is a church word. It's in the Bible a lot. There are many songs that we sing with this word in it. But the reason I decided not to use it ever is because this word has baggage. And yet it's so much part of this page of the Bible, I decided I'm going to say it today. And this is probably the good time to do something unlike we've ever done before, right? Things are very different today than they usually are. I mean, in 2019, we were told to avoid people that you would label as negative, but this year the goal is to avoid anyone who's labeled positive. Or did you ever dream that you would drive up to a bank with a mask on and ask for money? No, things are different today. I got sent a joke this week. Why did the man have no excuse for not going to church? Why did the man have no excuse for not going to church? Because now it's virtually everywhere. Stuff is definitely different than it ever has been before. So I'm going to say the word that I said I would never say in public. You still might want to cover your ears. I'm sorry. Here goes. The word is faith. This sermon is about faith. But wait, before you decide to stop listening, and see, that's my point. Nobody ever hears a sermon start out saying, today we're going to talk about faith, and they rub their hands together and say, oh, goody, this is going to be so good. Instead, people go, oh, faith, maybe we should see what's on the Hallmark Channel instead. But this is a really great page of scripture with a really great verse in it, and it's got some really great stories, and so do I, so please hang in there. We're going to talk about faith today, what faith isn't, what faith is, and what faith does, what it isn't, what it is, and what it does. Here's what faith is not. Faith is not just admitting a bunch of stuff about God and the Bible and church. Some people talk about the faith like if you know the right stuff, if you say the right words, then you've got the faith. If you show up every Sunday, back when we used to show up every Sunday, if you sing the songs, if you pray the prayers, if you quote the quotes, we all know people who could clear the Bible column in Jeopardy in seconds, but they're not nice people. James says, you believe that there is one God, good, even the demons believe that. Saying stuff is true is not faith. It's just saying stuff is true. And faith is also not a guarantee that everything is going to work out good for me right now. Sometimes people say that. They say if you've got faith, life is going to be sunshine and roses and lollipops all the time. My grandfather's back got broken when his mine caved in Ohio one day, and he suffered with back pain all his life. Once he went to a faith healer who told him that if he believed in God enough, he could be healed. And my grandfather believed in God, and he begged God to heal him, but his back remained broken. And the faith healer told my grandfather it was his fault that he did not get what he asked. He did not have enough faith. Some people think faith is the magic quality that forces God to let us have everything we want, which is an interesting take. If you don't get everything that you exactly want right exactly when you want it, you don't have faith. So apparently Paul did not have faith, so apparently Jesus didn't either. That's probably not right. Faith is not a blind leap into the unknown either. Lots of people think this when they hear the word faith. They think it's like kind of a warm-hearted step into the black cavernous hole of your hopes and dreams. You got to have faith often means you got to act contrary to everything you know to be true and just hope that somehow everything's going to work out fine. That's not faith. That's dumb. It reminds me of the two guys at the theater. They're watching the hero scale the skyscraper to try to rescue the damsel in distress at the top. And one guy leans over and he says, I bet you $10 he doesn't make it to the top. And his friend said, okay, you're on. And they both watched the hero wend his way upward. And sure enough, at the end, the hero is standing on the roof with the girl. So the first guy pulls out his wallet and takes out a 10 and tries to hand it to his friend. But his friend refused to take the money. He said, I can't take your money. He said, I've already seen this movie. I knew he was going to make it. And the first guy said, no, you take the money. You deserve it. He said, I've already seen this movie too. I just didn't think he could do it again. Some people think faith is just going with your gut in spite of everything that you know to be true. That's not right. Some people think faith is a sense of spirituality. Whoever and whatever you may worship, it's being really spiritual. To say a person is a person, maybe she's a person of deep faith, can apply to a follower of Buddha or Muhammad or Jesus or John Tesh. Doesn't really matter what you believe as long as you're really sincere in believing it. That's faith. But none of those ideas line up with what we find on Hebrews page 11. Not even close. Walking around just thinking things that don't affect you? Nope. Walking around as though your superpower is luck and everything's going to work out easily in your life? Nope. Walking around doing stuff that you're pretty sure is not going to work? Nope. Walking around chanting little spiritual mantras to yourself? Nope. None of those comes even close to the characteristic we find championed in Hebrews 11. There is something in some people that changes them, that empowers their lives, that makes them different from everybody around them. That's faith. For instance, the sermon writer says, with faith, Abel offered a better sacrifice than Cain. Genesis says they both offered sacrifices, but God liked Abel's sacrifice better because of this thing inside of him, his faith. For example, the sermon writer says, with faith, Noah built an ark, even though he couldn't see anything coming. So God told Noah to do this because Noah had this thing in him, and Noah listened to God and obeyed him. And because of his faith, Abraham loaded up his truck and he moved to Beverly Hills, that is, movie stars and milk and honey. That was stepping out of his comfort zone, which he could do, Abraham could do, because he had this thing in him. Similar to when Moses' parents decided to disobey the government edicts and let their baby live, because they had this thing in them. Or when Moses ushered all the people out, it's like all the people in Western New York, he took up to Toronto through Lake Ontario. And Moses could do that because of this quality that oozed out of him. Moses really had this thing. But it wasn't just Jewish people who had this in them, and it wasn't just prim and proper people. There was this lady of the evening, this foreign lady of the evening who worked in the nastiest part of Jericho. She had this in her too. And because of it, she sided with the enemy army that was going to come and attack their city. And she helped the spies from Israel. And she ended up not getting squashed when all the walls came a-tumbling down. They all had this thing in them. Every person listed on this page of Scripture, it's the common denominator. People who are listed by the preacher on the 11th page of his sermon here, they all had it. Hebrews 11 says it like this. What more shall I say? I do not have time to talk about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets who, through faith, conquered kingdoms, administered justice, gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, who quenched the fury of the flames, who escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. He says, there were others who were tortured, refusing to be released so that they might gain an even better resurrection. He says, some faced jeers and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and in holes in the ground. Those are the people that God thought were great. He put those people in his hall of fame. And can you agree with me that wasn't because they just sat there thinking something? Those people did stuff. And it certainly wasn't because it always turned out good for them. It was because they had something in them that made them special, different, better. What was that thing? What's the thing that makes God go, huh, nice one, when he sees it in you? Hebrews 11:13 says, all these people were still living by faith when they died. They didn't receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth. People who say such things show they're looking for a country of their own. If they'd been thinking of the country they left, they would have had an opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. The thing, the preacher says, the thing is faith. It's being sure of what you hope. It's being confident of what you can't see. It's the thing without which it's impossible to please God. Please listen to this. We cannot please God if we don't have this. But we can give God pleasure if we do. The guy who wrote this sermon that we call Hebrews, he says, and I quote, "Without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him." You know what faith is? Faith is confidence in God so rock solid that you can bet your life on him. That you do bet your life on him. Faith is the thing that makes you so sure that what God says is true, that you do what he says no matter how that feels to you, because you're sure he's right, because he's always been right, and he's always been good, so you trust him. We were watching the Smothers Brothers. Do you know the Smothers Brothers? They are twins who used to do comedy on television. There's a dumb one, his name's Tommy Smothers. There's a smart one, his name's Dickie Smothers. They're twins. They sing and talk and tell jokes. Once Dickie said something and Tommy said, oh no, that's not what our drummer says. And Dickie said, so do you always believe the drummer? And Tommy said, yes. And Dickie said, you do? You always listen to what the drummer says? And Tommy said, yes. He said, do you do whatever the drummer tells you to do? And Tommy said, yeah. He said, Tommy, that's crazy. What if the drummer told you to jump off a bridge? Would you do that? Would you jump off a bridge? And Tommy said, well, not again. All the people mentioned on this page of your Bible, they all found God to be trustworthy. They all thought God had proven himself smart and good and able to be trusted. So they listened to him and they obeyed him, come what may. That is faith. They knew that in the end, God keeps his word. And if we haven't gotten what God's promised yet, they knew it wasn't the end. That's what everyone mentioned in Hebrews 11 was like. That was their one thing. They did stuff because of the confidence that they had grown to have in God as a good God. They weren't great people. These are not superheroes. Noah got drunk. Abraham was a liar. Moses murdered a guy. Gideon was chicken-livered. David committed adultery. Rahab, they were messed up people. They were pretty messed up, but God holds them up here because they did one thing right. They trusted him. They bet on him. They were totally confident that God was good. Do you know people like that? Have you known people like that in your life? I do. People with great faith, with great stories of doing stuff with God because they trust him. For example, I met a guy on a missions trip once in Panama. His name is Corey. Corey is from Missouri, and he was working with the missionaries there in Panama, and he is Missouri through and through. He talks with a twang. Corey has two vehicles. He drives a pickup truck, and his other vehicle is a pickup truck. I got in one of his trucks once to drive up to a village in the mountains, and when I turned the truck on, this song came blasting out of the, it was so loud, it was so country western, I immediately killed the engine till I could figure out how to turn the radio off. Turns out it was a CD. Corey just is Missouri. And he likes to go limb lining. Have you ever heard of that? Limb lining is where you bend a tree down over a river and you bait it with a large hook with a 6-inch perch and you hang it half in the water so that something really big will grab it. And when it does, the branch springs up and then you walk down and you see all these fish hanging from trees, you know, limb lining. Corey told about checking the traps one day, and when he came back, there was a 3-foot gar hanging on a limb. But when he went to cut the fish down, it wasn't quite dead, and it started twisting and spinning until it had the hook through Corey's forearm and out the back. His dad came to help him, but they couldn't get the fish and the hook loose, so they cut down the whole limb, and they took everything to the hospital, where a doctor had to use pliers to remove the hook from Corey's arm. And it was in so deep, the doctor bent the pliers trying to get it out. So Corey kept the bent pliers as a souvenir. Corey is perfect for missions. At the end of every sentence, when he says something, he says, I'll tell you what, I'll tell you what. And that means he is satisfied with the conversation. He's a funny guy, but I've not met a man so passionate about using the skills God has given him to help people live better now and go to heaven with us later. Corey's amazing. He would build ponds and he would teach Panamanians how to grow fish that would feed their families and that they could sell to others. And when villages go from not having any food or money to raising tilapia and shrimp, they are very grateful to Corey. And that's when Corey tells the village about the bread of life, that if you eat it, you get to live forever. Corey is a good, good guy, even if he does cheer for the St. Louis Cardinals. One day on our trip, I asked Corey who had taught him to trust God like he does. And he said his parents had, and some people from his church growing up had taught him that. And he said his college campus minister did a lot. His name was Roy Weiss. Corey said he used to walk into the campus office of Mr. Weiss, and every morning he would ask him, he'd say, "So, Roy, what's the good word today?" And Corey said Mr. Weiss would always pause what he was doing, look up at the ceiling for a minute, and then he would say, "Jesus saves and satisfies." Every day, "What's a good word, Roy?" And every day, Mr. Weiss would pause and then he'd say, "Jesus saves and satisfies." After a couple months of that, Corey said, "Hey, Roy, you always answer me the same every time I ask you what's the good word for today, but you always pause first. Why do you do that?" And Roy Weiss said, well, Corey, every time you ask that question, I have to stop and see if I think it's still true. And every day I realize it's still true. Jesus saves and satisfies. People who have it know that he does. They're sure of it. He's proven it to them. And it drives them in life. People who have faith are driven by that. Sometimes literally. Willowbrook had its second drive-by birthday party yesterday. Last week, Caitlin arranged for us to drive by the Peralta house and celebrate Blake's birthday in a societally responsible way, of course, from a safe distance, of course. But we went and celebrated, and that went so well that we decided to do it again this week. But this time, we did two families. And if you see the footage of us doing that on our Facebook page, you might see me showing up late to the caravan. Let me explain. We all met together at the CVS parking lot in Farmington. Sarah was going to lead us as we drove over to the Van Dyke's house. We all pulled out, heading north on 332. I was the last in line. I could see all the vehicles in front of me. And as we were driving, a string of balloons flew off of one car towards the Gun Plaza parking lot, but all the cars just kept going. And I said, "Well, we can't just go without balloons," so I whipped her off the road into that parking lot, and I tried to go where the balloons were blowing, but it was really windy. So I raced through to the place where I thought they'd come through the parked cars there, and I opened up my door waiting for the balloons, but I was never very good at Plinko, and I guessed wrong, where the balloons emerged way back further than I was, so I threw my car in reverse, and I backed up quickly with the door open, and I reached down, and I grabbed them, and I pulled them off the ground, and I pulled them into my car, and I was pretty proud of myself for playing catch me if you can with a bunch of balloons. Having safely secured the straying spheres, I got back onto 332 and tried to catch up with the caravan, but by now they were nowhere in sight. So I sped ahead, and I got to the road where we were going to turn, and I turned right, and I still didn't see them ahead of me. So I went really, really fast, and I barely caught up with them before it was time for us to all go on the drive-by. But I got there, and I had the balloons, and it was quite a lovely thing. And I saved and satisfied. I love stories where I'm like Jesus and I get to drive 90 miles per hour. But that was our first mobile celebration yesterday. Then we drove to the next family's place. We all stopped at Burger King parking lot. We got everything planned and it was right ahead in a new subdivision. It was right on, we were almost there and we got in our cars and we turned on to 332 and we turned off at 332 and we drove in and we turned right and we turned left and we were slowly inching our way around the circle trying to get to the house where the family was. People were watching us as we went. Signs and balloons and candy at the ready. We must look like something, this big parade going so slowly through this neighborhood looking for the right house. One dad and little girl were out in their driveway and they were waving to us as we all went by and we made our way all the way around the circle back to where we started. And then the line stopped. And I saw that there was some discussion in the front of the line and some people were rechecking GPS and we all sat there. I was just sitting at the back of the line, and there was a man who walked down from his house down his driveway to get his mail, and he looked at all of us sitting there in line, and he looked at me through my window, and he had this questioning look on his face, and I rolled down my window. I said, "I think we're all lost." And he laughed, and then we took off, and we turned down the next street, and we found the birthday girl waiting for us. People who have it, when they face moments where they seem lost, somehow are not lost. For instance, Mabel. Do you know Mabel's story? Tom Schmidt follows Jesus, and he started visiting a nursing home regularly because of that. He wanted to just help people. One Mother's Day, he was walking down a hallway that he didn't usually go down in the nursing home, and in that hallway sat the saddest cases of people losing control of their bodies and minds that he had ever seen. He brought flowers with him that day. He had one left, and he saw a woman who looked the worst of all sitting there. He could tell by her blank stare that she was blind. She had a thick hearing aid on in one ear. Cancer had left her face deformed. Her mouth drooped. She was drooling. She just looked gross. But Tom Schmidt placed a flower in her hand, and he said, "Happy Mother's Day." And her reply surprised him. Though it was garbled, he could understand her to say, with a very clear mind, "Well, thank you very much. I'm sure it's lovely, but would you mind if I gave it to someone else because I can't see, you know?" So he pushed her wheelchair down the hall to some other patients, and as she stretched out her hand to give a flower to another lady, she said, "Here, this is from Jesus." And Tom said, "I realized right then that this was no ordinary human being I was pushing around." So from that time on, once a week, twice a week, whenever he visited the nursing home, he would stop in and see her. He said, "I found out her name was Mabel. She had grown up single on a farm with her mother. When her mother had died, she stayed on. But when she had gone blind, she could not care for herself any longer. She was confined to a convalescent home. She was now 89 years old. She had been in this home for 25 years. She had recently contracted cancer, but Tom said, when I read the Bible to her, she would often quote right along with me, and she would sing songs. She really loved the Lord. Tom said, one day I asked her, I said, Mabel, when you're lying here in bed all day, what do you think about? And she said, oh, I just think about Jesus. Tom said, I have trouble doing that for 5 minutes. He said, well, what do you think about him? And Mabel said, I just think about how good he's been to me. He's been awfully good to me, you know. Jesus is all the world to me. And then she started singing, my life, my joy, my all. He is my strength from day to day. Without him, I'd fall. When I am sad, to him I go. No other friend can cheer me so. When I am sad, he makes me glad. He's my friend. Tom says some people think that Christians aren't dealing with the real world. But of Mabel, he says, that is not a woman denying reality. That is a woman transformed by her relationship with Jesus. It seems like Mabel, based on her circumstances, should be feeling pretty lost, doesn't it? But no. No, because she's got it. She's figured out that Jesus is trustworthy no matter what it looks like. I hope you get it. Because this is the thing. When you've got this thing in you, when this is you, you can please God. A magician who worked on a cruise ship did the same act every night. Every night, same trick, same act. And there was a parrot on board who watched the show every night, and eventually the parrot caught on. And the parrot started saying, it's up his sleeve, or it's behind the green door. And the parrot was giving away all of the tricks of the magician. But one day the ship hit an iceberg and sank to the bottom of the ocean. And all that was left was a piece of wood floating in the water with the parrot on one end and the magician on the other. And they stared at each other for a while, and finally the parrot said, okay, I give up. Where's the ship? Here's the thing about people mentioned on Hebrews page 11. When everything in life was gone, when it all disappeared, they still knew who could save and satisfy. I so hope that you know him like that, that you have confidence in Jesus, so much so that you do what he says because you trust him to know what's what. I so hope you get it, because without it, it is impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. But with it, when you have it in you, when that describes you, you can have your name written in God's Hall of Fame. People with faith are amazing. And I'll tell you what, in the end, nothing else will satisfy. Nobody else, only Jesus. Let's pray.